So we're moving on now. It feels like we can't move on to another speaker. So Dr. Jennifer Hoyle is here to speak to us. And Jennifer's consultant and occupational lung disease lead for the Northern Care Alliance. So Jennifer's a consultant respiratory physician and an occupational lung disease lead at Pennine Acute NHS Trust. She's run a busy occupational lung disease department since 2004, no mean feat, and still carrying on going. She's also a member of the British Thoracic Society and an honorary lecturer at Manchester University. She's got numerous publications in occupational lung disease, and we've talked earlier about, Benita talked earlier about the importance of evaluating and publicising on this topic so we get the right treatments and prevention approaches in place. So Jennifer, I'll hand the mic over to you.
Thank you. So you might think, just before I start, well, you know, Binny's just been speaking about Greater Manchester, so what's the kind of clinical lead from the strategic point of view? So the best way I can explain this, if you imagine, when I first started in this role, it was to look at Greater Manchester from the overview perspective with a team. And that team has got managers, we've got primary care representation, we have commissioners, we have most important voluntary sector, you know, families and patient representatives. And what we found is rather like seeing lots of people play football. They're all working really hard, they're working up a nice sweat, they've all got a ball each, nobody knows where the goal is. So our role is to look at the whole view. The Innovation Manchester is there to perhaps provide the tools, you know, provide the footwear, you know, and give different ways in which you might be able to score those goals. But it's our role really to look at everything and say, well, actually, yeah, that works. That's worked in that sector. These are your hot spots, and that's different for each different area in Manchester. And this is the pathway, and this is where we think you should be going. So the start of this journey was really, and I've not really spoken anything about COPD, but the start of the journey was to say for Greater Manchester, well, what's preventable? What's killing everybody? How much money are we spending on everything? And what do we come out with if we use that formulation of preventability, mortality, morbidity and costs? And what we came out with was COPD, flu and subsequent pneumonia. Now, asthma does come out, but it's much lower down simply because asthma isn't, even though it's obviously killing people when they're young, from the death perspective, isn't killing quite as many as the others. So even though asthma's there on the strategy, we decided first 3 years to concentrate on those things that are actually, you know, killing the most people and costing us the most with regards to mortality and morbidity. But today, I've been asked to talk about the work we've been doing with flu over the last 18 months. Now, that's quite a tall order in 15 minutes because we've been doing quite a lot. And the honest answer is, with some of the things we've done, we've gone round in a big circle because some of flu, actually, we can't influence at all. For example, the pathways that are governed by public health. But we've been trying to look at what can we do. So this is just an example of the kind of things that we might be able to do. So what we found, the basic facts. So over the last 7 years, the admissions across Greater Manchester have risen dramatically, 3 times compared with other conditions. Now, here's a shock. Winter occurs every year. So this is the right care data for us. And one of the things you will notice in the blue line, children are the super spreaders and they get viruses first. Another shock, isn't it? And look, it happens every year. And then you'll notice on the other peaks that shortly after, everybody else gets flu as well. So, not rocket science, we all know this, and yet we're all doing the same thing every year. We aren't changing. So what is the goal? Well, the goal is to try and change it. The other aspect with regards to morbidity is that older people in particular, particularly if you've got chronic respiratory conditions such as COPD, will have a staggering amount of deconditioning and declining function when they've had a viral infection. It takes them a lot longer to get better. And of course, the excess winter deaths, respiratory, more than a third of the excess winter deaths are respiratory. So with regards to Greater Manchester, we're currently using more than 41,000 bed days more than our peers because of flu and subsequent pneumonia. We're actually, if you look at this chart, kind of second to the top. And actually, obviously in this area, and Liverpool are our co-conspirers with regards to being pretty near the top. So there's kind of a red route that goes from Oldham up through North Manchester, Salford, and all the way up to Liverpool, where you'll see a very, very similar pattern. So what do we know? Well, you can look at it from preventability. That's the first thing we've looked at. What can we do to prevent? And we do have vaccinations, and we have very, very bad communication with regards to the vaccination. But the fact is, the vaccination works very well in younger people, okay? And even in the over 65s, it will stop them coming into hospital and it will stop them dying of the flu. So it's still worth giving, despite the bad press. So this is our background. More than a quarter of the respiratory admissions are due to flu or pneumonia. Non-elective admissions are much higher for older people and people with chronic respiratory conditions. We're using lots of bed days. We're spending nearly £10 million on this. And actually, 11,000 more people could be receiving the flu vaccination if we actually tried a little bit harder. So if you look at the breakdown of who's having vaccination, sorry if this is a bit small, we've got in orange the people with chronic respiratory disease, we're achieving vaccination in about half. So we're not going to get anywhere near herd immunity with about half. And this is despite having pushes for, and other strategies for quite a long time. One of the things that you'll notice is at the top we've got patients with diabetes and those with morbid obesity and diabetes actually are very similar with regards to the diabetes. But if you look right at the bottom, those with just morbid obesity who are also at risk of flu, we only get a quarter. So why is that? Well, it's probably to do with people don't know they should be having a vaccination, they're in, at home, they're maybe going to voluntary groups or private groups such as, Weight Watchers, for example, and we're not accessing these people. And we're certainly not being able to access these people where it is convenient for them. So there are barriers to uptake of the vaccination in the system we are currently using. So what can we do to break down the barriers? So the potential issues we found were identifying who actually needs the vaccination. Not everybody seems to know the rules. If you want to provide vaccination in other settings, then it's how do you store the vaccine, the pre-ordering, who pays for it, who delivers it, how are they trained, how do you find the consent, how do you make sure if it's not in primary care, the primary care gets the quaff points because that will help them. Lots and lots of barriers. So we decided to do a pilot. And the pilot was to try and break down some of the barriers. So we thought, well, what can we do to help? Try to make it more convenient. So we know primary care, obviously they have a big push on vaccination. We also know it was very controversial when they said, well, community pharmacy to provide it, but it's that's gone with quite good success. Are we going to really affect primary care if we try to offer this in the secondary care setting? And there are two ways you can offer vaccination in the secondary care setting. We'd already done one part, and that was to ensure that we're offering vaccination for those who are in hospital for a while. So they missed the vaccination because they're in with a stroke, or they're in intermediate care because of rehabilitation. So they're in the wrong place and were not able to go. But what if we offered vaccination to those that are attending clinic? So we thought, well, let's identify clinics where patients are perhaps at very high risk. And respiratory clinics are usually patients at a really high risk of having flu. So we decided to set up an offer. We chose biologic clinics and respiratory clinics where there are already nurses simply because if we can't make it work there, we might as well forget it. We needed a database, an essential database, one, so it could track and give you results. Two, so that finance could know what to do with it. Three, we had to discuss with the partners how we're going to get paid. Four, we had to include pharmacy, and they had to know how to track and replenish stocks. And then we need to make sure and speak to the GP advisory boards about how they'd like to be informed. So we consulted with the GP advisory boards and said, well, this is what we want to do. We want to pilot it. Is this going to be a big problem? And it was openly discussed with regards to, well, finances and things like that. So let's do the pilot and see what happens. So this is basically what we decided to do. Identify patients at risk. If they've had vaccination, simply to document it and document where they'd had it. And if not, to offer it and see if we could persuade more. Now, I'm going to give you the results from the biologic clinics. They will, why the biologic clinics? And that's because the number of patients in the biologic clinics are relatively set. So the denominator, you know, when you do the fractions, the bottom figure. So that's relatively fixed. So it's easier to show what increase in percentages you've had by using that. But we did find good uptake in the other clinics as well, just from the point of view of being able to offer it. So sorry, this is a little bit wordy. So we took the pilot in these clinics, the biologic clinics. So biologics, for those that don't understand, biologics are basically an injection that's given to try and help control asthma. We needed an outpatient fridge, but we did find that we could just use cool bags as well, you know, which is what GPs use too. We organised an inpatient stock of vaccines, which might seem fairly obvious, but actually is one of the biggest barriers to providing the vaccination because of the ordering required at the beginning of the year. And we decided to monitor. And obviously, we need to have, you know, standard operating procedures for what we do and show that people are trained. The training's very easy because we already had nurses that were able to give vaccinations. It was 10 minutes on an internet video. That's it. So pretty easy. The consent is a standard consent form as per the public health. And we spoke to GPs, and sometimes we could return this electronically for them. Other times we couldn't. But just to make sure, we changed the clinic letters so that it was fairly clear who had and had not every year had the flu vaccination. And we gave patients copies of the consent forms as well and sent copies to the GP just to make sure that everybody was informed. We did ask about previous vaccination, obviously. There was a question, what if somebody gets the flu vaccination twice? Well, to our knowledge, nobody's had the flu vaccination twice. We are going to try and roll out something to do with the pneumococcal vaccination, which is a bit more of an issue. But most people are generally able to tell us if they've been vaccinated within a certain period of time, of a few months. And the initial vaccination was simply reordered by the pharmacist being able to look onto the same database. So the results. Well, mepolizumab is one of those fancy names of drugs where it's given by an injection in a clinic. Okay. And the numbers in these clinics are quite small. But we'd found that 69% had already been vaccinated in primary care, which is pretty good. Okay, we're all happy with that, but can we improve? What we found in this group was a further 7 accepted the vaccination if we actually sat them down and said, you really need to have it. So there's an impact with regards to being able to sit down with your specialist and say, look, we really think you need to have it. The surprise was that they were all quadrivalent. So what does that mean? Well, when we set this up, we thought we're probably going to capture the older people who find it difficult to get out and have come to clinic and made a special journey and had an ambulance and, you know, who found it difficult to get to the GP. No. Quadrivalents are given to the under 65s. And what we found, and I'll show you, was it's actually the younger people that don't attend that we were vaccinating. Those people, the very people that are very high risk for spreading and also who are going to benefit the most. So we increased in this cohort the uptake rate from 69% to 93%. The one that, or two that wouldn't take, one of them actually had flu. that season, and this season, I can tell you, has actually had the vaccination after having flu properly. And the other one is needle phobic, which you might think, that's a bit odd, he's coming to clinic for a vaccination every month. But we really, really can't persuade him to have two needles in one setting. So why not vaccinated? As I said, texts were sent to most of the people, just about all of them, got just ignored. The fact is, people are busy. Young people are busy. They don't have time. It's not convenient. They've got families. They don't think it's important because they're young. And a lot just simply didn't think it worked. So the biologic clinic, another high-risk group, more patients this time. This is last year, so had to exclude egg-allergic people. This year, we have a vaccination for those, and I can tell you all of them have been vaccinated. Again, a large proportion, 72%, had already been vaccinated by the GP or pharmacy, but we pushed that up in this group to 85%. And again, the majority were the quadrivalents. The majority were the young people who just could not get there because of understanding the importance of time pressure. We have quite a lot who refuse because it makes them feel ill. And I think we have to accept that the flu vaccination does make some people feel ill. But what I've found is that those people that where it makes them feel ill after the first couple of vaccinations, as time goes on, they seem to have less of an effect of it making them ill. And the explanation is, well, you know, it'll stop you dying of it, so it's your choice, really, isn't it? So the conclusions for this pilot were that people are attending respiratory clinics and they are young and they're not having the flu vaccinations and we can actually help fill that gap. And actually the over 65s are really well trained and they are still going to go to the GPs and to the pharmacies to get their flu vaccination. So there's no risk with regards to, you know, funding and GPs and what they are able to provide. But there is a real opportunity to educate people and get them into the habit. And it is about habit forming. If someone's coming to secondary care, they're seeing a specialist, and the specialist is saying, you really need to have your flu vaccination. I want to persuade you. I can give it you now. That actually starts to form a good habit. So this year, what have we done? Well, this is really where the strategic network comes into its own, because lots of the innovations that we've heard about are really, really good ideas. But how do you embed these? And you can't embed them unless you've got people that are agreed across the board, the commissioners, primary care, you know, the whole system. Because otherwise, we don't have a sustainable solution. Who is it that's going to pay for it in the long term? And how are we going to make sure it maintains? How do we know what's good for one area is what actually another area needs? So we had the contract changed with regards to the public health. So the previous contract last year was always, you can provide flu vaccination to that group in the hospital, to the inpatients or to that group. So this year it's changed slightly. You can provide flu vaccinations full stop. So the hospitals are able to actually then decide how to distribute it between inpatients. So we've done that and that's worked very well. But the rollout into the respiratory clinics has been very variable. Well, why? Because the clinicians were told they could do it and they were given the tools to do it. But then when they actually went to do it, the pharmacist was like, whoa, hang on a minute, this is our vaccine and we don't want to share it because we want to give it to our workers first so you can have some in December or January. So there are still barriers, invisible barriers, despite reordering. And there was a little bit of a problem with the vaccine this year because they changed the formula, didn't they, shortly after you were able to order. So the plan is to get the clinicians together with the infection control leads in each trust and actually sit them down and say, right, get your orders right. So the lessons are from this pilot is that actually we can make a difference if we work together, and it's about providing services that integrate across the barriers and to try and reduce silo working and to try and reduce the barriers and make it more beneficial for the patients. Now, I could also tell you all about the other things that we're trying to do, the second strategy, which is actually trying to look at how do we actually go back to that graph. And primary care are kind of work with their hands tied behind the backs. Once somebody's got flu, they have to wait for the flag to go up to say there's flu around before you can prescribe. And we do have swabbing practices, but those swabbing practices don't seem to be able to tell us that flu's around before the hospitals fill. So there's something about point of care testing, and we're doing pilots in that. And then finally, we've created our own super spreader this year. And our own super spreader is a vaccine nurse, and she's looking at all the different strategies for pneumococcal vaccination as well as flu. And the idea is that she will update people to who gets what and when in primary care, community, the integrated care teams, and in secondary care, to ensure that we're all up to date with the guidelines and then pass it on. So thank you.
Thank you, and it's great to hear about preventative approaches, and also that you're really pushing on this and working out ways that suit people. And I think it's quite interesting about the ordering policy nationally as well, and how that could be slicker actually, just so it enables people to get what they need. So thank you ever so much.